Rajesh Merchandani is my name. I'm the Senior Director of Communication and Policy Outreach at the Center for Global Development, which is a think tank based in Washington and London that focuses entirely on international development issues and seeks to change policy. I've been there 6 months. Before then, I was a BBC journalist, hence my connection to this panel, for 21 years. So I'm very happy to be here and talking to some very, very interesting people. Let me go down the line and introduce them to you. Laura Gamsey is a filmmaker and also works with the organization The Life You Can Save, which is an EA-affiliated organization here at the conference. Nico Pitney from The Huffington Post and Dylan Matthews from Vox, I'm sure, need no introductions. What we're going to do is that we're going to go down the line. We're going to ask our panelists to talk for a few minutes about their connection or what connection do they feel to the area of effective altruism. And then we'll ask some questions. And then you guys will get to ask some questions as well. We'll take questions within the panel. Laura has prepared a presentation. The other guys have not. And neither have I. So, Laura, I'm going to ask you to go first. Explain to us why you're here and what your connection is. And,
okay,
yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to try to go fast through the presentation, everyone, because I realize maybe you don't want to sit through a presentation. Is the click just the space bar or arrows? Got it.
Why don't we ask Nico to talk for a few minutes about your work and its connection to effective altruism?
Sure. I guess in my own work, after graduating college, I ended up at the Center for American Progress, and I was trying to find, that was an effort to do as much good as I could. It was, President Bush was in power. It was the sort of Democratic White House in waiting, and I thought, and they were doing some aggressive, putting energy into internet organizing and communications, and that seemed like a good area to make significant impact. And then when Huffington Post came around and had some early success, they see the idea of building a progressive media outlet that was not foundation funded, but that could be profitable and help make a space for other such organizations seemed to be a substantial impact. And now my thinking is on how to get journalists and the media writ large to adopt EA values. And I guess the two questions I think about are, one, how many journalists, when they're considering what story to pursue, and how many editors, when they're thinking about assigning stories or what story should get coverage, think about what stories will have the greatest social impact? And I think that the answer is very few. And how many of us here know which media outlets are doing the most sorts of stories that would have large social impact and the fewest? And I think we probably don't know. And that, I think, is also problematic because we don't have any ability to either incentivize or shame media outlets into making their coverage, designing their coverage so that it has a greater social impact. So that's what I'm thinking about, and I guess I'll keep it there.
That's very interesting. Lots of points to pick up on there. Laura's presentation has been located. She's ready to go. Do you want to take it away?
Yeah,
great.
Run from there. So on that same note, The Life You Can Save thinks a lot about how we can influence the most people through the media. This picture here is a campaign that we did 2 years ago where we gave away free money on the street, and we did it basically as clickbait bait to get the news organizations to cover it, and we were covered by Fox 5 in the DC region. Basically, we were giving away free money and then asking people, would you like to keep the money or would you like to give it to an effective organization? And we would tell them about the options, and the vast majority of people gave it back to us to donate to the Against Malaria Foundation. We also, on our website, try to use different tools to get people to understand the basic ideas behind effective altruism or effective giving. So here's our charity calculator. You can pick one of 16 charities. For those who don't know, The Life You Can Save was founded by Peter Singer. So Peter Singer is a big force in deciding which charities we choose. And so these are our idea of the most effective charities that you could be donating to. So you can choose a charity, enter an amount of money. I think the slides are going in. Okay, well, anyway, you enter in an amount of money. So here's $100 for these organizations. So here's AMF, if you were to spend $100 with AMF, the results, okay, there's the slide that should have been first. So you can choose an organization, enter in an amount of money, and see what happens with, what will the result be according to the organization and according to researchers like GiveWell and other organizations that have studied the impact of these donations. And so we try to stay as recent as we can be with these organizations and to get the most up-to-date information about where your money is going. So here's Evidence Action, Fistula, SEVA, Population Services. We have SCI on there as well, and 16 other organizations. We've recently added the new GiveWell recommendations. So here's Development Media International. And so that's an easy way to kind of communicate in a very simple manner the very basic idea of effective giving. And so this is a tool for people who have not yet even heard of effective altruism, haven't yet heard of GiveWell. And it's because we know that so many people spend less than 1 minute or less than 5 minutes on a website, this is a quick way to get the basic ideas across. And of course, whoops, some of these slides seem to be not in the order I thought they were in. Well, anyway, we have a big disclaimer, and of course, there's so much more information that you need to go into once you get these basic, simple numbers. But this is to get people's attention, and then we have the information below where they can learn more about these concepts. Speaking of Development Media International, we focus a lot on media and the impact of media, so video and radio, and the ways that we can use them to impact big audiences. And we have to be honest about the audiences in America and around the world, looking at exactly what they actually consume. So those in this room probably do a lot more reading and a lot more looking at charts than the average American. And at media stats, you'll see that fortunately or unfortunately, television is still a really big portion of where Americans spend their time. This is changing. Absolutely, especially among millennials. But if you look at the numbers of hours spent, by millennials, you'll see that watching television gets a whole lot of viewership, much more than video on the internet. And so take these data with a grain of salt. All of this is changing. But this is one reason why we're looking at making documentaries and video and eventually getting more coverage on television so that we can reach people that we can possibly reach. Because if you look at the numbers of people giving in America and the world today, it really dwarfs the number of people or the amount given in the EA movement. So that brings us to our video, which I hope will play. So basically, we're focusing on reaching the majority of people, and especially the majority of people who are giving philanthropically in the U.S. and throughout the world. And so we're really going through many channels, not just online, because we recognize that not everyone's going to spend a lot of time on a website. And so more than going to news footage on the television, we're looking to make documentaries that will then be picked up and seen by millions of people rather than thousands or hundreds of thousands of people. And that's our long-term goal. And right now we're in pre-production on a documentary featuring Peter Singer. So if anyone is interested in talking further about that, we can chat afterwards. And I guess maybe...
Sorry.
Yay!
Yeah.
This is
what I take. Is that you? Yeah. Oh, I might be changed.
I sure just keep peace. Rahman, what? Is the only day, ne? Yeah, it's the only one.
So guys, wow.
Sup, Monique.
Sup, Sup.
Шанс.
Або Україна.
So that's me. And we're making a documentary on this guy, so we can talk about it later.
Great. Thank you very much, Laura. Dylan, why don't you talk to us a bit about your work and how it relates to effective altruism?
Sure. Well, I got involved with sort of the ideas around effective altruism before I got involved with journalism. That as a teenager, I read Peter Singer, mostly to troll a Catholic friend of mine. But wound up being persuaded by a lot of it. And then as a college student, I started working as a researcher at the Washington Post and started having money. And I'd read Famine, Affluence, and Morality and realized I should give some of the money away, which led me to GiveWell, which led me to sort of the EA community at large. As it relates to my work, I think, it's just like a very interesting topic that... to be interested in the topics that effective altruism is interested in is to like be a human who is alive in the world. Like everyone is interested in what your career should be. Everyone is interested in like how to do good in your life, where you should give money, what you should eat, what you shouldn't eat. And so I find it fascinating to cover just as a journalist, apart from any interest in the movement. But also I think I write in a political context like Nico, and I think when thing about effective altruism is that it gets people to think in a more cosmopolitan mindset and a more rigorous mindset about how government can improve people's lives and can improve lives of non-humans. And so it provides an interesting perspective that you don't often see in media, which is always something you're trying to do as a journalist. You're always trying to find an angle that someone else isn't pursuing. So it's helpful for me in that perspective, and I also identify as an effective altruist and think it's an important movement, and think these are ideas worth spreading.
Okay, very, very interesting. Some points of overlap, some points of difference between you all. Let's pick up on some of those points. Actually, Dylan, let's start with you. That point about this subject matter is fascinating to you personally, and you want to write about it. Mm-hmm. Is that enough for your editors? That you want to write about it. Are enough people going to want to click on that article?
I had a meeting a couple of days ago with Ezra Klein, my editor, where he demanded more effective altruism coverage. So we're having good results with that so far. I mean, I think it really is, and I think there are a number of reasons for that. One is just the change that has happened. I think we, like most news organizations, get most of our traffic from Facebook. I think it's something like 60 to 70% of our incoming clicks come from Facebook. And to succeed on Facebook, you need things that people want to share, and the things that people want to share are things that say something about them as a person. And EA, for better or worse, like is a good source of that, that people like to share things about doing good, about helping others. And I think it helps reverse some of the negativity bias that's sometimes prevalent in the media, that there's an incentive to tell sort of positive stories in a way. One of the more successful pieces I've written in terms of just like raw traffic is a compendium of sort of positive charts showing positive trends in global development. You know, sort of life expectancy increasing, GDP growth in developing countries. And I think there was a time where that's not a story that would interest your editors because, you know, stuff is slowly getting very better in various countries is not like a news story. It's just sort of an ongoing trend. Whereas now people like to share sort of encouraging stuff like that with each other. And I think another thing is it's very easy to tie these ideas in with sort of stories that people are discussing that are not necessarily EA topics. I thought Will had an article in Quartz last year about the Ice Bucket Challenge that was a perfect example of this, that you can get millions of people to read about effective altruism when they're already talking with their friends about ALS research and dumping water on their heads. Similarly, I got a fair number of readers this week for an article about Cecil the Lion and comparing the impact of killing a lion in the wild to eating chicken the way that a typical American eats chicken in a given year. And, I mean, you anger some people doing that, but you also, like, force them to hopefully try to pivot from these viral topics into thinking of things in an EA framework.
Does it work? Hopefully.
I mean, it's hard to know. Like, and I think it's one of these things where you learn very quickly that most people are not going to be persuaded. Most people are fairly set in their views. And so from my perspective, the important thing is trying to reach as many people as possible, knowing that some small percentage of them might be persuaded. But if it's a small percentage of a bigger base, then you might have more of a shot.
Nico, the way that online journalism works now, it lends itself to more data visualization, and using the kind of graphs and charts that people all here love. And that article that you wrote, Dylan, about the things that have got better, full of, you know, great charts. And so that helps tell the story a bit, would you say?
Yeah.
It adds to the ability to tell effective altruism stories to mainstream media.
Yeah, to the extent that EA stories are often more likely to be centered around data, telling those stories has now become, in a compelling way, has become easier. I wanted to touch on, sort of to go back to my hobby horse, convincing journalists to consider this framework. I think more and more reporters are aware of the dangers of focusing too heavily on negative news stories when they don't represent the proportion of incidents in the world. I mean, I think, like, for instance, the focus on drug use in the African American community leading to, or at least helping shift along some of the policies that drug war policies, criminal justice policies that are now seen as really bad, and I think that's been a really positive change. It also happens to improve traffic in the way that traffic dynamics work. But I think it also suggests that they are open to and willing to consider another sort of perspective change on what good journalism is. And I think they can be thinking about how to impact the greatest number try to achieve the greatest good with their reporting.
But this is at the margins, though, isn't it? I mean, the vast majority of news output is still the bad stuff.
Yes, I guess I don't. I mean, anecdotally, it seems that way. I wonder, with the sort of the news outlets that are ascendant right now, whether the proportion is the same as more established media. My hope is that, I don't know. I'm curious what others think, but I would say that there is partly because of the traffic incentives that the ratio is shifting to be a little more. You know, at Huffington Post, we have this initiative called What's Working. We're trying to highlight instant, sort of create copycat solutions, highlight initiatives that are effective, maybe at the local level, and raise their prominence, and then cover attempts to replicate them elsewhere. And, you know, there is both we're doing that for both of the reasons, because it builds our audience and because we think it's an important part of journalism that has been ignored.
Interesting. Now, Dylan was just saying that Ezra demanded more EA coverage. What about Ariana?
She gently asked, requested that there be more, but didn't demand it. So I need to go back to her and
imagine she can demand it if she wants.
It was a polite request.
And Laura, you were talking about how, you know, your organization, The Life You Can Save, is thinking about which type of media will be best to get your message out there. And it's interesting that you sort of talked about getting coverage on Fox 5 for that video that you did.
Yeah.
I'm interested to kind of understand what sort of coverage that was.
So basically, that was at the very beginning of our kind of expansion. And I don't mean to pit different forms of media against each other, but more say that it's important to expand into all forms. And so if you're only doing online, if you expand to television or if you expand to newspapers, you are going to get a few more people aware of your organization. With Fox 5, it was, I mean, we weren't specifically targeting Fox 5, but they the ones who
covered the story. Do they cover the story to your satisfaction? Do they cover it right?
We didn't give them too many options. I mean, you know, it was a very simple thing that we were doing, and the reason that we made it so simple is so that it wouldn't be such a vast, complex thing that they could focus in on something that wasn't the actual point. So it was a very simple question that we were asking everyone who walked by: would you like to keep this 20, or would you like to give it to the Against Malaria Foundation? And if they wanted to know more, we would tell them more. So really, they covered exactly what we were doing, and we kept it simple because we know how mainstream media works.
And do you think it got the point? I'm assuming that was a short video, say 2 minutes or something, maximum.
I'd say 3 or 4, but I mean, you know.
You got a feature.
It was, I was pleased with the coverage. They actually did give it a little bit of time.
And you felt that they told the right story?
I wouldn't have written it exactly in the words that they did, but for their audience, and, you know, I'm sure they're best at targeting their media to their audience, and, you know, I think they told the story that we were trying to get out there, yeah.
Okay, that's good, because my next question to all of you is, do you think that traditional medium like television, which you just showed us, is still a dominant form of media that's being consumed, is it the right vehicle, the right way to tell stories that require a lot of nuance?
Mm-hmm.
You've talked about moving to documentary, which is a longer form, which allows you to tell that and allows you to make it yourself, to control what you're creating.
Right.
But news coverage, for example, of effective altruism, can it do it justice?
Do you guys?
I don't have a lot of experience in TV news. I mean, I think it's visuals are a tricky medium, but we found that people are receptive to online videos that try to explain sort of abstract concepts. You obviously lose some detail, but in part because you can use charts and other data visualizations as a way to get people visually interested while also conveying sort of an awful lot of information very, very efficiently. I think people have gotten better at that, but I can't really speak to TV news. Mm-hmm. You guys have HuffPost Live, which I think is a bit closer.
Yeah, although I'm not involved. I don't know. It's probably, I don't know. My guess is the case that video as a medium is really well suited to expanding the circle of empathy that, which is another sort of core ethic of journalism, in my view. And maybe, you know, less good than some other mediums at presenting nuance, but it's definitely done well. I mean, like Dylan says, some of the Vox explainer stuff is very nuanced and very intelligent and also really successful.
And Laura.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Speak up, speak up. Laura, you showed us some slides, one of which was research from Pew about media consumption. I mean, you went through them very quickly, but I'd seen it before, which is why I recognized it. Talking about the kind of media trends that are up and what people are consuming less of. Now, interestingly in that, podcasts are going through the roof.
Right,
actually.
Absolutely.
I think that's probably quite a good way for you to get your message across because it's slightly longer form, it's more discursive, it allows you to actually have a conversation with someone.
Totally. And we just started the Life You Can Save podcast. So it's going to be coming out. We're recording them all now and it'll be coming out next month. But I completely agree with you. Personally, everywhere that I go, I'm always listening with my headphones to various podcasts. It's a great way to get information and not have to be sitting in front of your laptop to consume it. And to just go back to your point about television, I completely agree with you. There's so much oversimplification, especially in the news and also in reality television, which is another way to bring people into this movement through the ideas and reach a much wider audience than might be reading a particular book. For me in particular, or just my personal experience, I first got into EA through reading Peter Singer's writings during college, but not everybody will be reading Peter Singer's writings during college, and so our idea is basically to get at least the basics concepts out there so that people who have the these thoughts already percolating in their minds and think that they're the only one in the world who care about these things can say, interesting, let me look that up. And then online they'll find the plethora of stuff we have out there.
Interesting. Just on the point of podcast, the CGD podcast is a must listen once a week. Must just point that out to all of you over here as well. Let's move on to a slightly more controversial question. I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Nico, you talked about this. How many journalists think about whether their stories will have the greatest social impact when they set out to write them? And you just talked about social impact being within your code of ethics of journalism. But is it the job of the journalist to change the world or to report the world?
Well, I think many of the, I think, uncontroversial tenets of journalism are highlighting injustice, exposing falsehoods, or improving accuracy of information. And I think within those realms, you can have more or less impact, and that decision, I would say, the question of what story will produce the most impact is not one that journalists think about enough. So whether or not they are trying to change the world, whatever impact they're trying to have by exposing an injustice or highlighting a falsehood or some, you know, one of these areas, I think they can also think about the extent to which that falsehood will impact others. Yes, so I guess I'm not accepting the premise that journalists don't aren't already attempting to change the world.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I have to say, when I went into journalism many, many years ago, I did it because I wanted to make a difference in the world. I wanted to change the world. You're nodding vociferously. Presumably that's why you did it as well.
No, just acknowledging that's why a lot of people do it.
Yeah. But what I found, and I'm giving you a little bit of a spoiler for my talk this afternoon here, so make sure you come to that as well. This is like plug central. Free advertising space. I found when I covered Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines in 2013 for the BBC, journalistically it was a great endeavor. Enjoyed it in that journalistic sense of enjoying a story. Did good work. But I noticed that my job as a journalist is to talk about what other people are doing. And what I wanted to do was be doing the doing. And so for me, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this as well, at that point, given the organization I worked for, the BBC, I realized that my job as a BBC journalist is to tell the story of the world as it is, good or bad, warts and all. It is not for me to step over that line to be doing the doing. That's when I realized that I needed to make the move. And I knew moved into the nonprofit world. That's the point that I was getting at, I think. It's the job of the journalist, or should it be the job of the journalist, to just tell the story of the world as it is and hope that someone watching or reading or listening will take the initiative to make the change.
If I can jump in. Mm-hmm. I think you find in all forms of media that even the slightest tweak can change the response so much. I think there was a podcast about a change on a Facebook notice where they changed the word "its." You know, they changed the most minor word and it increased the feedback that they got for, you know, whatever their desired response was by like 36%, just this one three-letter word. And I think within media, I think there is an infinite feedback loop dealing with what you're saying between what you report and what people hear and what people do. But I think the small tweaks that we can make and the perspectives that we cover, there are obviously an infinite number of things happening at any moment and an infinite number of perspectives relaying or reflecting upon that. What we choose to focus on and how we choose to focus on it can have a huge impact on the way people react to that coverage.
Guys, would you like to pick up on some of those points?
Yeah, I mean, Vox is a fairly different organization from the BBC. We were founded by people with backgrounds in opinion journalism, and so I think we've always been fairly comfortable with people voicing opinions. I mean, I think EA is a fairly unique community to cover in this way, and I think if I were covering another sort of community or another set, I would be much more hesitant to sort of dive headfirst into it. But the main risk of that is that you lose an ability to be self-critical and to be critical of what you're covering, and you identify too closely with the subject. And one great thing about effective altruism is that there's a strong culture of self-criticism and of aggressive like questioning of premises and of, I mean, we opened this conference with calls for people to be trying to think of ways to disprove their views about what the most important cause is. And I think that that's both sort of a defense against the danger there and very consonant with the values of journalism as I see them, that that it's there's a similar commitment to trying to not fall into tribalism or take sides or become part of a team, but to try to look as objectively as a human with human biases and whatever can, and then reach the conclusions that you're going to reach.
A few thoughts. One is, when you were writing for the BBC, you know, your article constraint was, say, 800 words. So you already are making a range of value judgments about what is important enough to include in the 800 words and what gets left out. And that's why I think that, you know, there's no objective journalism. There's always some really big value judgments, and you've got to accept those. And I think the question goes to then to journalists who say we're reporting very accurately the world in whatever stories they were doing when there was a, you know, genocide in Sudan. They were reporting the world. They weren't reporting on Sudan. What is the argument? What argument should be made to convince them that they should have instead reported on that? Or the reporters who highlighted the rash of child abductions in the 80s that was wildly overblown and produced a generation of helicopter parents who wouldn't let their kids outside. You know, they were reporting a reality, but and I guess beyond that, I'm interested in, there is a there's still a divide between journalism and sort of direct activism. You very rarely see a story, a well-reported story on animal on farm animal welfare that ends with a button to donate to Mercy for Animals. And is that reasonable? I mean, why is it that way? If the reporter is writing to expose injustice in this realm, and the individual reading it is at the point where they are going to be thinking about this topic more than they will maybe ever in their life, shouldn't there be an opportunity for them to take action? And what is the responsible way to do that without devaluing or harming the legitimacy of the reporting? Or I think it's a really important question. I think if we could answer it and provide a way for outlets to include those opportunities to give, it'd be a great thing.
Have you or anybody here come across riot.org? Do you know them? R-Y-O-T.org. So riot.org is a news website based in Venice Beach, California, that does exactly that. So they report the news. It's aimed at millennials. Report the news. At the end of a story, there is an action that you can take. And they do that because they say millennials are turned off by the news unless they feel they can get involved. And then they're really interested in world affairs. And then that allows them to kind of take an action as well. It's an interesting outfit. We're going to come to comments and questions in just a second. So I just wanted to kind of mention that on that point. You talked a little earlier to me about wanting journalists more to incorporate effective altruism principles in their work. Just explain to us a little bit about what you mean by that.
Well, I guess within any given beat, I mean, you know, it's one thing for like industry publications that are reporting what happened in a congressional hearing, or there are various reporters for whom this won't apply, but there are many for whom in their beat they can decide amongst a range of stories, and you know, as I said, I don't know what the standard should be for them. I'd love to figure it out. And I'm actually really eager to work on this and maybe create a product that helps reporters do this. And if anyone is interested, please email my first name at HuffingtonPost.com. I'd love to work on this year. But, you know, so say if we made a resource that showed a list of causes of preventable death, the conflicts with the greatest number of casualties in the past year, a lot of them people will know, but a lot of them in both rankings, and there are plenty of other rankings I think we could come up with. I think there'd be reporters who would be surprised. Oh wow, I didn't know. You know, there were 2,000 deaths in Mexico last year, and they're number 6 in the casualty rankings. That is interesting for a story, and B, it means that I can have an impact. You know, I can report on something that's impactful. So I guess, yeah, that's what I'm thinking, but I don't know exactly what that would look like, particularly for all the range of beats that exist.
I'm going to open up to questions in just a minute. Just a minute. but briefly, what I'd like to do is, because we have three exceptional communicators here, I'm going to put you on the spot and say in 3 sentences, because I'm a firm believer that there's no story that can't be told in 3 sentences. Explain effective altruism as you see it in 3 sentences. And then I may get some of you to do the same as well. Actually, we have... Is Will McCaskill there here? Is he still there? He was here. Maybe snuck out. And this is coming to both of you guys as well, Nico and Dylan as well. So
I'm just staring into space thinking
for it. Okay.
Does it have to be exactly 3?
No, thereabouts.
Okay.
Not like the 2 sentences that the guy in the last panel was asked to come up with 5 minutes later.
I mean, I would basically just say effective altruism is a movement of people who are working to find, who care about what is the most important. Start over. Effective altruism is a movement of people who are interested in affecting change in a positive way in the world and figuring out what is the most effective way of doing that.
Pretty good. Yeah. Guys?
I thought of something very similar, that people who are interested in making a positive impact on the world and are committed to using rigorous analysis and social science as tools in that process.
Yeah, I would say, how do you use evidence to make the greatest good with your life?
You did it in 1 sentence. Even better. Okay, that's great. Comments from you guys, brilliant. Thank you very much. I'm going to open it up to some questions.